This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 22nd, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 375. Merry Christmas and Happy Hanukkah. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, the MMA panel returns for a special Christmas edition. Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yen of the Simon Fraser University City Program are my guests. Which rich and powerful people deserve candy canes in their Christmas stockings this year? And who deserves a lump of coal? This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Here we are on the MMA panel. 'Twas the podcast before Christmas, and we're playing Not So Secret Santa. We're stuffing stockings of the rich and powerful based on their 2024 performance. Who deserves a candy cane? Who deserves a lump of coal? Joining me to decide that is Mario Canseco of Research Co., the other M in the MMA panel. And the A in the MMA panel is Andy Yen of the Simon Fraser University City Program. We'll go around the map, around the region, and around the country. First of all, one of the big bombshells back in the middle of spring break was Metro Vancouver announcing that the North Shore Wastewater Treatment Plant would cost almost $4 billion and take until 2030 to finish. And that story is a story that keeps on giving. We're still trying to flush out the truth from Metro Vancouver about the cost of this mega project and why our politicians at the federal and provincial stage will not order a public inquiry. And do we need the police to take a look? Big questions. Mario Canseco, what do you think of the performance of Commissioner Jerry Dalbervolney and also the incoming chair, Mike Hurley, the mayor of Burnaby? Where do they sit? Do they deserve candy canes or lumps of coal?
You know, this is one of the toughest ones. You know, when we move into federal politics or provincial politics, it's going to be so easy to figure out who gets the coal and who gets the candy cane. This one is inherently complicated because we just don't know. We just don't have enough information to try to figure out where we go from here. If I had to give the lump of coal to somebody on this one, it would be to the voters of Vancouver and the other municipalities who choose not to participate. One of the reasons why we have people calling the shots in Metro Vancouver is we send councillors with very little idea of how to do budgeting or how to do things, who get sent there by the votes of one in four or sometimes one in five eligible voters in their municipalities. So part of the complexity, which isn't something that we would see, let's say if we had a scandal of this magnitude in a place like Montreal or Toronto, because of amalgamation, this becomes part of the city. This is something that is going to be discussed at a larger level. And what we have here is another entity in Metro Vancouver where people can say, oh, that's out of our jurisdiction. We're just an overseeing panel and we try to do this and that. So when you have something that combines the inherently problematic nature of bureaucracy with the secrecy of a corporation, you get a scandal like the one we're just experiencing.
Andy Yen, what should we do? Should we affix coal or candy canes to a drone and deliver it way, way up high to the top of Metro Tower in Burnaby, where Metro Vancouver is located? Who deserves what, candy canes or coal at Metro Vancouver headquarters?
Well, I think that, you know, between a candy cane or a coal, may I offer a shot of whiskey that within the, I think, incredible challenges of trying to offer a consistency of services, in this case, water and sewage, it's an incredibly expensive endeavor I think through which is really covering a growing region. I think we just heard that, you know, it's been projected by 2045 that Metro Vancouver becomes a region of 4 million people, that those 4 million people are going to need things like water, sewage, waste disposal, and air quality, through which those are the predominant responsibilities of Metro Van. But yet, I think what Mariel talks about is really the problems of governance mixed in with the unsexiness of maintenance, of maintaining services through which you only know there's a problem when they're not working. And I think that if anything, this is the complexity of it all is we fortunately don't have to question for the most part whether we get clean water or we can flush our toilets for the most part in metropolitan Vancouver, which actually talks to how our systems do work. But yet, I think that they are increasingly under pressure due to growth, but then also due to really the physical decline of any infrastructure and the need to maintain it. And yet, the diminishing kind of resources we have towards not only oversight, but then just the general maintenance and expansion of that infrastructure. So I think that it is really, I think, a problem and an ongoing challenge in terms of governance. But yet, I think this unfortunately, I think, is going to be a ongoing challenge into the new year, really in how these projects have gone over budget. But yet, I think an even bigger one, and you actually see parts of the development community now stepping into this, is how to pay for it. And how the idea that new development, that growth pays for growth, is something that developers are increasingly backing away from, but yet the problem still exists. So I think that it is one through which we're all going to need to take a shot of whiskey in order to kind of figure out what's the best way moving forward.
At Vancouver City Hall, Mayor Ken Sim and his ABC supermajority, they're pushing forward, of course, on their plan to kibosh the park board. They voted in secret to spend another $11 million on logging Stanley Park trees. We found out only because some citizens unsuccessfully went to court to try to get an injunction to stop the logging operation. Now, ABC in the summer tried to shut down the integrity commissioner, who had been digging around on some complaints against various people involved in ABC. They backed off. They backed off on that after a bit of a public outcry. But we found out that Ken Sim converted a room in his office into a bit of a private gym. And of course, late in the year, he floated the idea to make Vancouver a Bitcoin-friendly city. All seem to be distractions from the budget and the Broadway plan. Now, the budget, of course, they did a victory lap that they kept the tax hike to a minimum, lower than previous years, but still not as low as a lot of Vancouverites want it to be. And of course, there's the Broadway plan. There's some serious concerns that this plan, which is catalyzed by the Broadway subway, which won't be finished until 2027, that this plan is going to lead to densification, lead to displacement and higher prices instead of more supply and lower prices for people to enjoy. Andy, we'll start with you on this. Ken Sim and his ABC majority, do they deserve candy canes or lumps of coal?
I think that it's perhaps really going into coal territory, simply because of the energy that is needed to extract for bitcoins. That I think this is the idea of the bro city, that we are now building a city around for bros, and that is really the kind of elements of what we've seen in terms of the kind of leadership we see we've seen in City Hall. I think that there are still some profound concerns around displacement in the Broadway. And the Broadway plan, where 25% of all the rental stock of the city is, and yet the ongoing concerns around displacement was only mentioned once in that 200 odd page report that was issued for the plan update. I think through which there was really scarcely time. There was less than a week for the public to actually process a document of that size, through which I think really has brought forward some big concerns around how that plan is being implemented, whether much of the rezonings really will come out in terms of new housing through which is going to be much more expensive than what it is today. that I think that this is really one of, I think, an area through which hasn't really brought forward a lot of change yet. I think that, of course, there's been a lot of promises in terms of 160 odd projects posed for the Broadway plan, not to focus too much on it, but yet I think a concern that really the city hasn't changed much, that really what has been delivered has been lacking. And I think that this is really, I mean, moving forward now, we are on the kind of precipice of a civic election. And is there enough here to, I think, have a second term of ABC, I think is a really interesting question.
Yeah, Mayor Canseco, the ABC majority at City Hall in Vancouver under Mayor Ken Sim, it's beyond the midterm mark. Nowhere to go but to 2026 and the civic election. What say you about their performance in 2024, lumps of coal or candy canes?
Probably leaning more towards lumps of coal for one reason. We were told that the previous council didn't work because we had too many people from different sides and there was a lot of animosity and complications in getting policy through. Now we have a majority government that can get its act together, that is using language that is unbecoming of a city council when they're having disagreements among each other. The fact that they lost the vote related to whether we should be using gas to heat our homes and our meals. Certainly speaks about a party that is not particularly united. That is definitely problematic heading into the by-election that we're going to be having. Whether that entails a discussion about around what happens with the park board, this is another story. But there's been a significant number of mentions about what the mayor is planning to do or thinking of doing or woke up and felt like doing, and not about the things that need to be done. And I think this is part of the complexity when you're running a city that is based on vibes, that is based on cutting ribbons, that is based on selfies next to anything that is shiny. And people in Vancouver start to notice these things. And I think it's definitely a situation where a couple of years ago, with a different mentality, with a chief of staff that understood the city and its residents, we would be closer to candy canes and not lumps of coal.
Now we move to provincial politics. Quite a year in provincial politics. The NDP under David Eby stays in power. They got 47 seats in the new 93-seat legislature, the October 19th election, that stormy, stormy day. It took a 22-vote razor-thin win in Guildford for Gary Begg after judicial recount to end the suspense there. Now, Eby said he had learned his lesson, that he especially heard a lot of voters who decided to leave the NDP and vote conservative. He was going to recall the legislature at least for a day. He eventually canned that idea. He went into a new deal with the Green Party, didn't need it with the 47 seats, but is doing it anyways just to have that extra cushion. In 2017, it was called a confidence and supply agreement between John Horgan, the late John Horgan, and Andrew Weaver, the Green leader at the time. Well, in 2024, it's called the Cooperation and Responsible Government Accord, the CORGA. CORGA.
Corrigan.
But we rewind to that pivotal day, the day that I think everything changed in BC politics, August 28th. That's the day that BC United withdrew from the election. Kevin Falcon reluctantly supported John Rustad's Conservatives after so many months of fighting and looking like they were going to split the vote. They decided on that day, and they announced it, that BC United would not contest the election. It would be up to John Rustad and his Conservatives to carry the Free Enterprise banner into the election. Now, who in BC politics deserves the candy cane of the year, and who in BC politics deserves the lump of coal of the year? Go with you, Andy Yan, first.
The candy cane for provincial level politics. I'm trying to wonder who should that go to. And I think that it's really, I think, ambiguous. I think that part of it is for everyone to get together because of imminently what's happening down south, which I think we'll be definitely talking about later on in the podcast. But yet, I think that this is really, I think, a time through which I think that there are some profound challenges in British Columbia on top of affordability challenges. It's also looking like, in spite of all the changes that were passed by the BC government, that it looks like there's a decline in housing starts in British Columbia in the forthcoming year. And I think there are any number of reasons, but I think it just really talks to really how housing is much more than zoning and height and density, but it is also a systemic kind of an outcome that really just isn't, I think, is as predictable as people might think by as they change zoning. But yet, I think really what happened with the NDP out in Surrey really highlights really how housing isn't just a numbers game. It isn't just really the number of units built, but it really talks to the need for amenities, the need for infrastructure, and how when you see the kind of growth and change that did occur in those places in Surrey, the lack of delivery when it comes to infrastructure, when it comes to an adequate medical system of services, that it all came back to bite the provincial government in the behind in this. So I think that it really just kind of comes down to more coal. We have a lot of coal giving here, I think, today. And well, I think maybe we can o reopen a few mines up north to the amount of coal that we're giving. So I don't have I have a lot of coal, not too many candy canes to hang around.
Mario Canseco, the NDP under David Eby was known for flip-flops going into this election. They decided to back off drug decriminalization after so much street disorder. They decided to say that they're going to explore preemptive arrests for drug addicts and violent criminals to keep them in jail to protect the public. And the carbon tax, that was something that David Eby said at the previous NDP convention, that if other jurisdictions were going to move away from it, BC was going to stay solidly behind a carbon tax and continue to charge a carbon tax because he thought it was an effective way of dealing with climate change, even though, of course, there's no evidence there that a tax can actually help the environment per se. Does David Eby deserve candy cane, or does he deserve a lump of coal? And what about John Rustad, going from almost zero, really just two members, all the way to 44 in the October 19th election?
You know, I think it's more a case of giving them the lump of coal and the candy cane in different moments of the campaign. The first 2 weeks of the campaign, it's definitely a lump of coal for the NDP. A lot of focus on everything is going to be bad. You shouldn't pay attention to these people. They have candidates who have said the nastiest and most horrendous things. You can't trust them. And that's the moment when the Conservatives start to do significantly better because they start to connect with some of the policy ideas that they had behind them. And we get to the debate where John Rostad doesn't really connect. The last week and a half of the campaign, the Conservatives get the lump of coal. They can't really close the deal. They announce a deficit that is significantly larger than the one that the NDP promised and ultimately delivered. And then the NDP sort of comes back into the fold and starts to talk more about policy. So I think there's a story about this campaign that is definitely related to the personability of the characters that were in front of us. And there was an opportunity for John Rostad to establish that emotional connection. It didn't happen. And I think what makes this significantly compelling for the next one is the NDP cannot run anymore as a party that is not the BC Conservatives. So I think they need to run on a record. They need to run on specific things that they need to deliver. And to me, one ministry is going to be crucial to this, and it's the now combined housing versus I'm going to tell municipalities what to do ministry, if we could call it like that, headed by Ravi Kahlon. It's an opportunity for them to say we're going to help hold these municipalities to account. We're going to try to build things, and it'll make all the sense in the world afterwards. But you know, none of this would be happening if Kevin Falcon hadn't become the Jeb Bush of BC politics, coming back 10 years after he was relevant and realizing that the land had shifted.
Yeah, low energy Kev. And here we go to the federal scene. Of course, it's been a crazy end of the year, a blizzard of news stories as the House of Commons wrapped up its fall session. And of course, December 25th is the day every year that Canadians celebrate the birth of Justin Trudeau. And this year, though, it's going to be different because you've got Pierre Poilievre looking more and more like being the prime minister in waiting. You've got the slow fall of Trudeau and the rise of Trump 2.0. The tipping point happened when Chrystia Freeland quit cabinet on the day she was supposed to deliver the fall budget update. Liberal caucus members came out of the woodwork. A lot of backbenchers, they went public. They want Justin Trudeau to take that walk in the snow pronto. Who deserves a lump of coal? Who deserves a candy cane in this scenario? Andy Yan.
Well, I mean, on another guy who was supposedly born on December 25th, it ended badly for him in terms of public crucifixion and seemingly watching the slow crucifixion of our promised leaders taking us into some promised land, I think really highlights the ongoing challenges of where we are now. I think that a lot of this, I think, is really I think offering too many things through which you can't deliver on. I think that there are some I think profound challenges in terms of affordability, in terms of the cost of living. I think that has not been delivered. I think that the kind of the statement of the former finance minister talking about I think what was it, bubbles or gimmicks that we're coming down to policy gimmicks that I think has made that long walk in the snow quite possible, or is it a long walk on the beach in Tofino that is going to occur? That I think is really I think part of this kind of major challenge. But yet, especially in the face of what is going to happen, I think down south in terms of the rhetoric, in terms of just really the need for a steady hand, that I think that this is going to be I think one of the I think major ongoing challenges for the federal government. And I think with a prospective Poilievre prime ministership, I think the question will be will he be able to right the ship in incredibly stormy waters?
And Mary Canseco, just quickly as we wrap up our look at who deserves what for Christmas on the federal scene, with the gimmick that the Liberals had, the GST holiday, which is not a statutory holiday, but everyone should be not charging the GST for competitive purposes. I guess that's what they're hoping. But for instance, we can pay less for our potent potables that we put into our eggnog this Christmas. And candy canes cost less, and so do lumps of coal and the stockings we put them in. Does Justin Trudeau deserve a candy cane or a lump of coal for what looks like a desperate last measure to try to resurrect his career at the end of 2024?
Judging by what has happened over the past week and a half, the notion of asking your finance minister to deliver something that she doesn't believe in, and then tell that same finance minister that you're going to fire them or to change them to another position afterwards, that is certainly something that deserves a lump of coal. You know, this is somebody who was a very clear ally for most of the premiership of Justin Trudeau. To see Chrystia Freeland leave the way she did, especially when faced with all of the situations that we've had over the past few weeks and months, which are essentially, we're not doing well, we need to change course, we need to do something different. We wouldn't have Donald Trump making jokes about the annexation of Canada or turning us into the 51st state if the prime minister were in a better footing, not only with the country itself, but ultimately also with his caucus. You know, we never heard this type of joke in 2016 or 2017 because Justin Trudeau was a very different politician back then. And I think this is part of the complexity for the Liberals. If you have a leadership race, if you are able to build some sort of goodwill behind whoever is there and come out really swinging about what Pierre Poilievre could do to this country, that might be beneficial for the Liberals. But you know, it still reminds me of the 1993 situation with Kim Campbell. You know, she comes in and everybody's happy that there's finally a woman in charge, And as the campaign progresses, they start to drop to the point where they only salvage two seats, neither of which was occupied by the prime minister who was sitting at the time. So it could go very well for the liberals if they do this quickly and if they do it properly, or it could go significantly badly.
Well, there we go. There's our look at Christmas 2024, our annual gift-giving spree this year. It's no GST involved as we give out these beautiful and sweet candy canes and nice black shiny lumps of coal into the stockings of the rich and the powerful. And thank you again to Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser City Program to join me on the Breaker.News podcast for the MMA panel. I'm M. Mackin, and there's Mario, the other M, and the A is for Andy, the Duke of Data. Thanks again for being with us throughout 2024, and at the end of 24, here we are. Go enjoy some eggnog with those potent potables as we ponder what comes next into 2025. Thanks again. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and of course, Happy Hanukkah to our Jewish listeners.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In ABC News Australia, Christmas gift might save the largest rodeo in the Southern Hemisphere. The Queensland government has granted the Mount Isa Rodeo a lifeline, committing $2 million to the local council to support the event. Administrators say a figure no less than this is needed to pay back creditors and run the event in the future. The rodeo is an annual tradition since 1959. In Focus Taiwan.tw, China lags TSMC's chip capabilities by around 6 years, says chip war author. Chris Miller said the new Huawei smartphone chip was made by China's SMIC with a process pioneered by Taiwan in 2018. Taiwan Semiconductor's chips are 8 times more efficient than those made by China. In Kyoto News, anti-whaling activist freed. Denmark denies Japan extradition request. Sea Shepherd founder Paul Watson was freed by Greenland after 5 months in captivity, but Denmark rejected Japan's request to extradite Canadian Watson. Watson had been wanted by Japan over a 2010 incident in which he is suspected of causing injury and forcibly obstructing its whaling for research purposes as an accomplice. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, a glamping company meets trouble in a tiny town in the Columbia River Gorge. The arrival of Under Canvas, a glamping company in the small town of Husum, Washington, has sparked controversy. Residents, including Dennis and Bonnie White, are concerned about the potential wildfire risk and inadequate road infrastructure. Despite legal battles and community opposition, the Glamp Ground is under construction and set to open in May 2025. In Crosscut, why Seattle's CID neighborhood shifted toward Trump. Though Harris still won the Chinatown International District, homelessness, crime, and immigration played a major factor in the rightward turn. The CID and other minority-majority neighborhoods like South Beacon Hill, New Holly, and Rainier Beach recorded more votes for Trump in 2024 than in 2020. The state is following a national trend. Higher volumes of voters of color with working-class backgrounds and no college degrees voted Republican, despite leaning historically toward the Democratic side. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate.
Virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to you and your loved ones. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Whether you've listened to every minute of every podcast in 2024 or you're listening for the first time at this Christmas time, welcome and thank you for your time. peace and prosperity for the year to come to you and yours. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 22nd, 2024. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 22nd of December in 1971, Doctors Without Borders founded in Paris, and in 1990, anti-communist activist and shipyard union leader Lech Wałęsa elected president of Poland? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Come visit me there, too. And sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News as news happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. And Merry Christmas. Until next week.